The Asian Classics Institute presents The Art of Reasoning with Geshe Michael Roach, recorded live in New York City in March of 1998.
This is the beginning of Class 8.
To pray this evening for Cecil Brenner. Cecil Brenner is married to Peg Brenner, who has been kind enough to house MSDC Washington for the last 20 years or so. Okay, and he's in critical condition tonight. Okay, so if you can pray for him. Tonight's subject. Say, Tenzin.
Tenzin.
This is the subject tonight from the Dura. And I was running out of subjects towards the end, so I started picking the hard ones, okay? And but then I decided I wanted you guys to debate more the last few classes. So it'll be short. So we'll finish before the break, and then we'll do some more fun things after the break. Okay? Ten stands for Teni, and Tsun stands for Tsunja. Say, Tseni, Tsunja. Tseni, Tsunja. Tseni means the definition of a thing, okay? The definition of something. For example, the definition of ngopo, or working thing, is? Dunjin nupa, anything that performs a function, okay? So Tseni means the definition, and Tsunja means the thing which you are defining. In the West, this is called definitum or something like that. Definitive or something like that, but I just call it the thing that you're defining. How's that? Okay, I prefer to call it that, because right? I can't pronounce the other one. All right, so say Tseni, Tsunja, Tsentun, Tsentun. So we're going to study tonight, we're going to talk about the definition of definition itself. Okay, how do you define something? How do you make a definition of something? And in Buddhism, I don't know if you noticed yet, but this is critical. You know, you have to decide how you're going to define a thing before you can talk about it. Both parties have to be on the same wavelength in the sense of agreeing to the definition of something before you can debate it properly. So very typically in the debate ground, you'll say, I don't think we're on the same wavelength. You know, what do you mean when you say that? You see what I mean? What do you mean when you use that word? And then they have to give a definition for it. And then you check to see if the definition and the thing it's supposed to define have certain relationship between them, Okay? Do they have, do the rules regarding how you define something apply? Is his definition airtight for the thing he's trying to define? And we call those, the qualities that a good definition should have are three. Okay? And I'll give them to you now. Say, Zeya, Chisum, Sangwa. Zeya, Chisum, Sangwa. Let's do the easy parts first. Su means three, okay? That's pretty easy, okay? Sangwa means all three should be there. Sangwa means complete, okay? Sangwa means all three should be there. Chö here means a quality. Three qualities have to be complete. Three qualities have to be complete if something is to be a good definition. Okay. Now we get to the hard part. Zeya. Okay? And I'm going to talk a little bit about Zeya and its brother, Dagya. Okay? Everybody got that part? Okay. We're looking for three qualities that are Zeya. Okay? And I'm going to talk about Zeya. Say, Zeya, Daya. Zeya, Daya. Zey means stuff or material. Okay, Zey. Zey means material or stuff. Okay? And Yu means, it makes it an adjective in this case. Okay? It's material. Zeya means it's material. The thing is material. Dag Yu is the opposite. Dag means sort of. How would you say? Made up by the mind or something like that? Okay. You can say nominal. Dagyo would be nominal or something that exists only as an idea. Okay. It's Dagyo. So Zeya means something that has some material existence. And Dagyo means something which has only a conceptual existence. How's that? Conceptual existence. Something like that. The idea of Zeya versus Dagyo in Buddhism is a huge subject, and you can spend years just talking about the difference between the four Buddhist schools of ancient India about what material versus conceptual means, okay? And each school has its different idea. When we get into the mind-only school in November or late October, it'll be the last regular class of this series, we're going to talk a lot about Zeya and Dagya, okay? Because in their school, it's very important. This distinction is very important, okay? And it's a little bit different for each school. And then 99, if you remember, is going to be a huge review of 15 courses, okay? Which I think would be really cool, because kind of we can wrap up everything in your mind. For a Geshe candidate, that's what you do from the day you finish your last class to the day you get your final Geshe exam, which can sometimes be 10 years apart, okay? Depending on how many guys are in front of you, because they only graduate 2 a year in Haramba, and they only graduate 4 a year Lingsei. So, you know, depending on what number you are in the priority, you know, we're lucky at Sarah May because we're one of the smaller colleges. We only have about 1,000 monks. Sarah J has about 2,000, so you have to wait twice as long or something, you know. Zeya is defined as something which, when you want to perceive it, you don't have to focus on all its parts and then conceptualize the whole. Okay, remember we're in a lower school now, okay? Don't start complaining to me about it, alright? We're not talking Madhyamika anymore. Don't forget what hat you have on, they say in the monastery. Okay? You have a Sautrantika hat on this time. You're Hinayana school this time. So for them, something material means you can just perceive it straight and you don't have to look at all its parts and then conceptualize it in a certain way. Okay? And they say examples are colors. Okay? The objects of the five senses, for example. It's not like you have to divide up the smell of some frites French fries from Second Avenue, which I don't get to have any much anymore. And then you have to think, oh, this is this smell, and then conceptualize it into a big smell or something. You just smell it. You know, when you see blue, you don't think like, oh, light blue, dark blue, medium blue. You just think blue. Okay? It's not like a big decision. And it's not like you have to perceive it via seeing all its parts and then conceptualizing it in this school. Okay? In this school. So that's the meaning of Zeya. Examples are colors or other objects of the senses and also the mind. Okay? The mind itself in their school, in their belief. Okay? Like you don't have to think about the left side of your mind and the right side of your mind or anything else. You just perceive your mind, right? You're just aware of it. It's not like you have to analyze it and put together some kind of conceptualization about it. You're just aware of the mind and you're just aware of colors and that's all. It doesn't go through a process of, in their school, of seeing the parts and then putting something together, okay? So the definition is more or less perceiving it doesn't depend on perceiving its separate parts and creating a conceptualization or something like that. Zeya, okay? Material. Those things exist in a material way. And then Dagya is the opposite. These are things which you must perceive the various parts and then put them together in a certain way. Examples in the lower Madhyamika school would be a car or a person. Car or person, which if you think about it, do they belong in the category of mental things, physical things, or things which are neither and which are ideas? You see? Where do they belong? Where does Winston belong in there? Yeah, it's Dhammaduchi, it's the third choice, okay? When you say Winston, you're not referring to Winston's mind alone. When you say Winston, you're not referring to Winston's physical body alone. You're referring to a concept which covers both the physical body and the mind. Okay? It's an idea, really. It's a concept. That would be Dakya in this school. You see? Perceiving Winston depends on perceiving the physical body, having a Jebok deductive perception of his mind. We assume he has a mind, he's moving around. Not sure, right? Could be an emanation or whatever. And then we put that together and call it Winston. And that's Dakya. Okay, that's Dakya. Okay, in this school. You'll come back to meet these two guys many, many times in the future. Very important in Madhyamika, very important in mind only. Okay? And they'll take on different meanings in those schools. What's it got to do with Tenzin? Well, the definition of a definition was Jaya Chisum Tangwa, right? Say Jaya. Chisum, Tangwa. It must have those three material qualities. Okay? If the three material qualities are present, the thing is a good definition. And here are those three qualities, which I'm sure you're dying to learn. Okay? You don't care as long as it's short, right? So you don't have to memorize too much. Chir. Say Chir. Teni. Yimba. Chir. Tenyi, Yimba. Chir means generally speaking. If you're from Gerong, like Gerong Kensa Rinpoche, it's spear. Okay? It's spear. Okay? Like in the outlying regions of Tibet, they still pronounce it probably the way it was originally pronounced. It's spear. Okay? Chir means in general. Tenyi means definition. Yimba means it is. So generally speaking, it is a definition. Okay. It sounds like a definition, okay? That thing which performs a function, okay? So that's the first thing. I mean, it's generally structured, sounds like a definition. That thing which is hot and burning, which is the definition of what? Fire, okay? That thing which is wet and flowing, water. Definition of fire. That thing which is hard and self-supporting, earth. You know, that thing which is light and moving, the element of air, wind, okay? And those are definitions. Tsashin Sepa, Seshin Tepa, Lenshin Sherwa, Yangshin Yowa, okay? Those are all definitions. So generally speaking, it should sound like a definition, all right? First thing, all right? It should be like a definition. Okay? Is that enough? No. Second quality. Say rangi, senshi, tengdu dupa. Rangi, senshi, tengdu dupa. Okay. Rang means it. It. Rangi means it. Senshi is an important word and you should learn it, okay? When you learn senyi and when you learn sunja, you should go ahead and learn senshi, okay? Senshi means a definitive example. So you have senyi meaning definition, you have sunja meaning the thing which you're trying to define, and then you have senshi meaning a defining example or a definitive example. For example, lopo or a working thing would be a sunja, something to be defined. Dunje nupa, that which performs a function, would be a tsenyi, a definition. And then tsenshi, a water pitcher, would be a classic example, like a definitive example. Okay? So tsenshi means a definitive or a classic example of that thing. Tsenshi, tengdu dupa means, tengdu means on top of, dupa means to exist. To exist on top of in Buddhist philosophy means it should apply perfectly to a classic example. Okay? So if I come up to you and say, this water pitcher is a classic example of a ngopo, of a working thing, you should say, well, what do you propose as a definition of a working thing? And I say, anything that performs a function. And you say, well, does that apply perfectly to this classic example that you gave? And I don't say anything, I just pour you out a glass of water. Okay? Dunje nupa. Okay? It performs a function. Drink it. Okay? And so that's like a proof. That's a proof that what I proposed as a definition applies perfectly to the classic example that I've given you as a nupa. Okay? So that's a second test of the validity of a definition. Okay? Third test. Final test. Say shengi, tenyi, maimba. Shengi, tenyi, maimba. It should be something that's not a definition for any other thing. Okay? Shen means any other thing. Okay, I've simplified the Tibetan here because I didn't want to give you a 20 line thing. Okay? Shengi means something else. Tenyi means definition. Maimba means it's not. Okay? In other words, it can't be so fuzzy that it could apply to another object as well. It should be precise. It should not be appropriate as a definition for any other thing. It should fit the thing it defines and no other thing. Okay? It should be airtight in that way. Okay? There's also a thing called Tensunki Goge, which is 8 relationships between the definition and the thing defined. And those are kind of cool, and we don't have time to do them. So get back to me later. All right? For the thing defined, they are very similar. Okay, what do you guess would be the first one? The three qualities of something defined. Generally speaking, it should be a thing. Okay, I mean everything can have a definition. All right, it should be a thing that you could define. Okay, it should be a thing that you can define. By the way, every existing object can be defined. Every existing thing can be a tsunja sooner or later. Okay? Like there's a definition of dunje nupa also. Okay? There's a definition of the definition of a working thing also. Right? And it would be the dzayuchisim tsunwa, tsangwa, of dunje nupa, of that which performs a function. And then you can go on and on and on. Okay? You can also have the definition of the definition of a working thing. And then you can have the definition of a definition of a definition of a working thing. And like that, you see? Every object in the universe can have its own definition and should have its own definition. So the first requirement to be a something which is defined should be, it's appropriate to be defined. I mean, it's just something you can choose to be defined. Okay? Second quality would be what? It should apply to a typical example. Okay? So, not only should it performs a function applied to the water pitcher, but the description or the word working thing should also apply to a water pitcher. Okay? It applies nicely to its typical example. Okay? People should be able to say of its typical example that it is it. Okay? Thirdly, it shouldn't be the thing defined by any other definition. Okay? And that's all. Okay? Those three qualities, when you're talking about the definition of a definition, are called the three material qualities. Those three qualities, when you're talking about the definition of something to be defined, are called the three conceptual qualities. Okay? Why? I don't know. Okay? I was sitting there during the meditation and trying to guess, okay? I used to worry about it in the debate ground. I haven't had time to check it out thoroughly in Scripture. I'm not sure. It's not mentioned directly in this section. It may be somewhere else. But it seems to me, which is more material and which is less material between fire, the concept fire, and then hot and burning? Which is more material? Hot and burning seems to be more basic to me. You see, hot and burning feels like something you could burn your hand on, as opposed to the concept fire. When you say fire is defined as hot and burning in English, you often put what around the fire? You put quotation marks. That, I think, is the way in English, and I'm not sure yet, my thinking on it's not clear, is the way we indicate a qi to me, a quality, a general principle. You see, the idea of fire, as opposed to a fire. Okay, you know, work on it. But I think when you say fire, quote, is defined as that which is burning and hot, then the burning and hot to me is more material. And fire, quote, becomes more conceptual. And I believe that's why definitions are called more the three material qualities. That's hot and burning, right? And then the thing which you're defining, quote, fire, is more of a conceptual thing. At that point, when you're talking about the definition of, quote, fire, I think it's more conceptual. And that may be why, although I haven't confirmed it in Scripture and I want to admit that, that's called the three conceptual qualities. Okay? By the way, in this school, takpa, meaning what? Unchanging thing, and takyu are synonyms. We'll have to talk about it someday. Difficult, okay? It's difficult. Oh, I knew that would get Jay Han going. No. Oh, conceptual. Okay, fire with quotation marks about it, around it. Is that an idea? Is that a mental picture? Is that perhaps something unchanging? You see what I mean? The concept of fire. Fire as a quality. You know, is that perhaps something unchanging? Think about it. Okay, you have to cook that. Right. Yeah.
Second characteristic, right? I don't understand it at
all. It should be true of the typical example. Like, what you normally do is you say, what are you trying to define? Working thing. What's your definition? Anything which performs a function. Give me a typical example. A water pitcher. Okay? Then you have to decide, is this a working thing? Okay?
The thing itself.
Yeah. Is this a working thing? Is the example, the tenshi which he gave, the classic example or the definitive example, does that apply to the definitive example? Can you say of a water pitcher that it's a working thing? That's all. That's all. Remember, normally, an example, a tenshi, should be a shitun. One object which combines two or more qualities of the definition and of the thing defined. That's all. Okay, that's another fancy way of saying that. Okay, the thing that you choose as the classic example should incorporate both the definition and the thing defined in one object, and that's what makes it a classic example. A pitcher should be both a working thing and a thing which performs a function. Okay, it should be a one thing which incorporates both. Okay. Then you can say that this is a good definition to fit that example. Okay. Can we make up new definitions? Oh, no, no, we can, you have to, you will, yeah. Can you make up new definitions? Sure. Are there classic definitions for most objects in Buddhism? Yes, okay. And, you know, they get debated in the monastery. From time to time, they encounter a new object. And someone says, should we change the definition or not? So, for example, when I was in my student years in the debate park, fluorescent lights were a big debate. You know, is this hot and burning? Because it looks like fire in it, you know. And then everybody would go up and grab them and say, no, you know, it's not too hot. And they'd say, well, is that fire or not? And there'd be this huge debate would break out, you know what I mean? And you know, yeah, every once in a while you come across something like that. That's okay. That's okay. Okay. If you think about, let's pick a typical definition. And this will be the last part of definition, because it's not an extensive subject in the Dura. Okay, it's important. It's very important, but there's not a lot to say about it. Okay, in the Dura, let's take a definition and see how it works. Okay, let's take this definition. By the way, try to write both lines. Okay, write both lines. I'll take a break while you carve it. The Matulwa had a problem, okay? Cut this out here, okay? It means boo-boo, and I think the computer did a boo-boo just to prove it on that word, okay? Yulia, did you have a question? I'm sorry, I didn't see you over there.
Yeah, I thought you had said last call, so that generally speaking, it's the way to be wishy-washy and evaded, or we can pull
you down. Did I say that?
I think maybe I'm wrong, but it seems to be the way to not
call. By the way, if you're wishy-washy, sooner or later, she asked, it's a good tactic to be wishy-washy in a debate. I mean,
so
when you're in trouble, you want to try to stay obscure, yeah.
Yeah, so
oh no, that generally speaking in the first part of the definition of a definition is just saying, you could take out the generally speaking. I mean, you can say it should sound like a definition, or it should be thought of as a definition, or the two parties should consider it a definition, or somebody should propose it as a definition. That's all generally speaking means here. Okay. It doesn't mean what it usually means in a debate, when you are trying to cover your rear end in case there might be an exception somewhere in the universe, which is what, yeah, I was talking about that. You always say chittang. You know, that way if someone does figure out a counterexample, you can say, oh, that's why I said chittang. Okay, generally speaking. Okay, say sadhu, milue, shepa, kashik. Okay, by the way, you always say kashik like that. Say kashik. Kashik means the thing is A, da 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 da, and B, da 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 da. And the kangshik is always between the A and the B. Okay? And that's how you say, look, this thing has to have two parts to it. It is da 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 da, kangshik, and then you pause and you take a smoke, and then you say, and da 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 da. Okay? And there's always supposed to be a pause between them. Okay? So kangshik, if you look up kang in the dictionary, what do you find, Sutrimla? What? You find who or what or something like that. Shik means A, and then you go crazy. Kangshik is an idiom. Okay, kangshik means it has to be both A and B, and B comes after kangshik, and A comes before kangshik. Okay, and that's all. You've already met Sautamilui Rigpa or Sautamilui Shepa. It was the definition of Tema, valid perception, pramana. Okay, valid perception was defined in this school as Sartumilui Rigpa or Shepa, same thing. Okay, Sartumilui Shepa. Sartu means fresh. Because in this school, recollections aren't Tema. They're not valid perceptions. Remembering the pizza you ate this afternoon doesn't have the same ontological status as biting into it. You see what I mean? In this school, okay, in the Madhyamika Prasangika, there's a debate about it, and they decide that memory is a valid perception, okay, of a remembered object, okay, and therefore of the pizza. Okay. You can debate it later. Milua. Milua means unerring, which generally means the thing that you thought it was and the thing it really was were the same. Okay? Although on an ultimate level, no one who hasn't seen emptiness directly yet has ever had a truly unerring perception of anything. Okay? And that's another story. But that's again another school. Okay? Milua means unerring. Shepa means state of mind. Kanshik. When you reach Kanshik and you're a translator, you go back here and put one, okay? That's all. And that's all. And you should do it that way, by the way. Okay? It the one and the two that are used in English to do that, to designate two very necessary parts of a statement but which are separate from each other, is exactly the right way to do Kanshik, okay? And it has the same power in Tibetan. It's like, I'm going to give you two things and I'm going to separate them with Kangshik, and each one is important. Each one is necessary. Okay? It's much stronger than Dung or Xing or Jing or La or anything like that. Okay? Dokdel means free of conceptualization. Matulwe means unmistaken. And Chepa again means state of mind. So I'm proposing this as a definition. I'll say it in plain English once or twice through. You concentrate on what you think might be the definition of. Okay, what's the tsunja here? What am I trying to define with these two lines? You know, what's that? Charades, okay? I'm thinking of a state of mind. It's fresh and it's unerring. It does not involve conceptualization and it is not mistaken. What state of mind am I talking about? Huh? Munsum, thank you. Munsum, a direct valid perception. Okay, because an indirect valid perception, like a deduction, involves thinking, right? Oh, A is C, so and C has to be B, so A must be B. Okay, that's not free of conceptualization. This is a definition of direct valid perception. Okay, let's see how each part of the definition acts in defining a direct, comma, valid perception. All right. The different parts of the definition are meant to achieve two goals. One, goal number one, eliminate other types of things that might be mistaken for the thing we want to define. So if you think about it, there's two goals of all definitions. And this is important, okay? There are two goals of all definitions. The first is to eliminate or to disallow other types of perceptions that we might be talking about. Okay? That's the first goal of a definition. The second goal of a definition is to address common misperceptions about it, common mistaken ideas about the subject. Okay? And those are two goals of all good definitions. All right? It should eliminate other types of perceptions, in this case, that might be mistaken for it. And it should eliminate or it should address some wrong ideas that people normally have about it. Like if I was going to define nirvana for an American audience, I might not only say, you know, it's the permanent stopping of your mental afflictions because you've seen emptiness directly. I might also add, and by the way, it's not that you disappear and go into some never-never land, twilight zone, okay? I mean, I might also want to add that to eliminate some common wrong ideas that my audience has. You see what I mean? Or I might want to do that with other things in Buddhism. And when you describe objects or Buddhist ideas to an American audience, you often find yourself adding new parts to the definition to address their unique wrong ideas about it. Okay? Emptiness is the general absence of a self-existent thing. And by the way, it's not that you sit there and try to make your mind black. Okay? That's all. Alright? Let's go through each part of the definition of this definition and see which parts are acting to prevent, to disallow dissimilar types, other types that might be mistaken for it, and which parts are meant to address specific wrong ideas that certain people have. Okay? And then you'll get the idea of how definitions work. And then we'll be done with definitions. All right?
Yay!
Okay. Fresh and unerring. By the way, Jehan, but it's a rule that a teacher should continue to ask questions of a student until they screw up, you see. I mean, if they get something right, you should keep asking them until they finally get something wrong. I think Ken Rinpoche is very good at this. What other states of mind are there besides direct, that's a Mayingak, right, valid perception? What other? I'll say there's two other states of mind. Tell me. That's only one. That's not bad. Now divide that into two. No, divide. If I throw out all the states of mind in the universe which are direct valid perceptions, how many other states of mind do I have left, generally speaking? Two. Yeah, great. Invalid perceptions we can throw out. An example in scripture is standing on the full moon day in a dark night with no clouds, and you look up and you press your eyeball like that. You can try it with the Quaker House lights up there. It works, okay? And you see two. Okay, try it out. You press your eyeball and then there's two of them. Okay? That's an example of a tsen min. Okay? The perception of two lights where there's only one is a non-pramana. It's a non-valid perception. It's an invalid perception. So yeah, Jay's right in one sense. When you say direct valid perception, you are disallowing that kind of direct invalid perception, right? And great. And all valid perceptions which involve like logic or conceptualization, you know, deductions, okay? So if I throw out all the direct valid perceptions in the world, I got two things left. All the screwy perceptions and all the perceptions that are not direct, you know, the indirect ones, like where I have to sit there and figure it out, you know, what does the back of Winston's shirt look like? I don't know. Knowing him, it's probably white. You know, now Elizabeth could be checkered, could be striped, could be leopard skin, you know, I don't know. You see what I mean? And that would be, you see, that takes a deductive process. I'm perceiving the back of their shirts, but I'm doing it through deduction. Okay? So this, when I say fresh and unerring, which of those two other states of mind have I already disqualified? The invalid perceptions. Give me an example. Okay? That's all. Oh, look, two Winstons, you know. That's invalid. Okay. Why? The reality and the appearance don't correlate. Okay. Yeah, generally, what makes it invalid is a long story. We'll get there someday. Okay? So fresh and unerring, first of all, eliminates the invalid states of mind. So it has, this part of this definition is functioning to disallow or to disqualify a certain other type of perception, okay? Which is what? Screwy perceptions, okay? That's the first, this definition is cool. Now, what about free of conceptualization, Mr. Han? It eliminates the other type of valid perception, which is the deductive ones, okay? By the way, I'm saying deductive in a very general term. Of course, you know there's, you know, what do you call it? Conventions. And there's scriptural authority perceptions in addition to deductive perceptions. There's actually three kinds of conceptual valid perceptions. Okay, but the most common one is ngoto, which is deductive. So I'm using the word in a general sense. Yeah? She says, couldn't you, isn't fresh to say, no, you can have a, this is fresh. The first moment of this is fresh. Okay. It is free of conceptualization, but it's not fresh. So when I say fresh, it's eliminating in this school memories. Okay, that part of the first part is disqualifying memories. Okay, yeah, which in this school are not valid. Are not valid kinds of perception. Unmistaken, why they put unmistaken there, after they've already mentioned unerring, we have to talk about. We didn't get there yet. Okay? But these two parts of the definition, the ones that I've underlined twice, those function to disqualify other types of perceptions. Okay? Now, what are those other parts of that definition doing in there? They address wrong ideas of special groups of people. Okay? They address wrong ideas of particular groups of people. For example, if I chose to define emptiness as the general absence of a self-existent thing, and by the way, it ain't some black, what do they call it? Black hole in your mind. Okay? It's not that. The second part of that definition is technically not necessary. Unless I'm speaking to Americans who have such a wrong view about it, that I have to add that to clarify the definition. See, that's what I'm saying. Definition involves two goals. One, disqualify dissimilar cases. Two, address your audience's specific wrong ideas. And then your definitions are cool. Okay? Unmistaken here. There are schools of Buddhism that think that in a sense, when I see two lights, it's not mistaken, okay? Because all it's valid, right? I mean, if you squish your eye, there are two in a way, you know? There are schools that think that, okay? And the reason to add unmistaken is to say, okay, you can have a direct perception, but it's not necessarily valid. It's not necessarily unmistaken. Like Ellie was kind of tending towards that viewpoint, right? Look, if you see something with your own eyes, it's probably correct, right? Machia, chaba machu, shaw, squish your eyeball. Okay? All right? It's a direct perception you can't deny, but it's not unmistaken. So the word unmistaken here, which seems to be superfluous, is not. It's meant to address the common misperception that might pop up in almost anyone's mind that if I see it with my own two eyes, it must be correct. March up. Squish your eye. Okay? That's all. Okay? You can have a direct perception, which is not a valid direct perception. That's all. Okay? Now, the other one here is free of conceptualization also addresses a wrong idea. There was a school of ancient India called Rikpachen, Nyayaka, the logic schools. I've translated it as the logicians, okay? And they believed that even the perception of blue involved a conceptualization, you know? You had to think about it in some way, or your mind had to glue together the parts of the blue to see the blue or something like that. Sounds like somebody else, right? But anyway, it's to address that misperception that we also add the words free of conceptualization. It's to address their wrong idea that you can have a direct valid perception which does involve conceptualization. Okay, that's all. Okay, so those are the two functions of a good definition. And I'm going to give you the words for those. If I can find them. Say, Rick, Mitun, Selwa. Rick, Mitun, Selwa. Rick means type or class, type. Okay? Mitun means dissimilar, which are not similar. Okay? Mitun means dissimilar types. Selwa means it eliminates them, it disqualifies them, it disallows them. Okay? That's the first quality of a definition, or the first type of definition, or part of a definition. Those parts of the definition which are meant to disqualify, in this case, in the case we had, two things. Deductive valid perceptions and invalid perceptions. Okay, so the parts of a definition or definitions which are meant to disqualify dissimilar types of things are called rikmitinsela. Okay. What's left? What's the other half? Parts of the definition which are meant to disqualify common wrong ideas, common bad ideas. Like when I say, and by the way, it's not a black hole in your mind, okay? Don't sit there and meditate on black. Black's not a negative thing, by the way. Okay? Black is a positive thing. Emptiness is not closing your eyes and concentrating on black. Okay? Loktok selwa. Say loktok selwa. Loktok selwa. Okay, write it down and then we'll do it. Loktok means wrong idea. Lopatopa. Lok means wrong. Tok means to perceive. In this case it means an idea. Loktok means a wrong idea. Okay? By the way, I'm sure everyone who's studying Tibetan is sensitive to the fact that this tok doesn't have a sa secondary suffix. Because when it gets a sa secondary suffix, it becomes realized correctly. Okay? Which is nasty. You know, tok without a sa means to think something in the sense of being wrong. Like a paranoia is a dopa. Okay? But tok with a sa means to realize something in the sense of, when I say realize, I thought he was my friend, tok. But I realized, tok, that he wasn't. Okay? The sound is completely the same. The spelling is different. Okay? And in the monastery, you often, when you're in a debate, you'll stop and say, you talking about one with a sa or not? You know, and they'll say, I don't know. I say, well, you better tell me and then I'll get back to you. You know? Okay? Alright? Loktok selwa means it disqualifies or it disallows wrong ideas. Parts of a definition or specific definitions which are meant to address and disqualify dumb ideas about that thing which the other person has. Okay? And those are the two qualities of definition. Okay? The whole formal logic subject for tonight, right? I'm done with sentun, okay? And that's pretty much all there is in sentun, all right? But there's a lot to cook, right? The whole formal logic thing I'm going to finish in 2 minutes, okay? Because from now on, we need time to debate. Okay? So here you go. Okay, say nangru. Mamikpe tayanda. Nangru mamikpe tayanda. Okay. Nang rung means, nang means to appear. Rung means appropriate or possible. Nang rung means, I'm translating it as perceptible to the opponent involved. Okay? This is, remember we had last time, We were talking about proving that something's not there, which they would have trouble seeing anyway, which involves something that they would have trouble seeing anyway. For example, a preta, a hungry ghost, or something like that. Or whether Jay Siller has or hasn't seen emptiness directly, or whether he's a tantric dealer or not. Okay? That involves something which is not normally perceptible to a normal person, okay? To the opponent. So there's a whole realm of logical statements which are meant to address how touchy it is to talk about things that people can't see directly, okay, which are imperceptible normally. And we decided that it was one of the most important functions of logic to convince yourself that that's the case, and you've got to be really careful about judging other people. Okay? Who knows? I mean, that one of the most important goals of Buddhist logic is not so much to defeat your opponent. In fact, in the Pramnavartika, one quarter of the chapters are entitled Logic for Your Own Self. You know what I mean? Proving things to yourself. You see what I mean? And it's proving to yourself logically that you, how much of the world you don't know if it's one way or the other. I don't know what's on the back of your shirts. You know, maybe you all went out and had a party and put, hey, this stuff really works, and probably Schunenbauer was there, and it was his idea, and he spray painted everybody. I don't know. You know what I mean? I can't assume that the back of your shirts don't have anything on them. You know what I mean? But how much do we assume all the time, especially with other people? And how much intense bad karma you collect when you do that. And then that disqualifies you from reaching a Buddha paradise. You see what I mean? It's not like a sin and there's no God up there keeping track and blah, blah, blah. The karma of that prevents you from reaching a Buddha paradise in this life. So stop it. I mean, be a logician. Be a strict Buddhist logician. You know, be skeptical of everything in a good way. You know, I don't know if this person's a bodhisattva or not. They seem like a pain in the ass to me at work. Maybe there's some reason why, you know. I'll keep my mind open. I'll reserve 3% of my judgment about them. I'll give it a 3% chance that this guy's a bodhisattva sent to help me deal with my patience or anger, okay? And you have to allow that. You know, the purpose, one of the most important parts of purposes of Buddhist logic is to straighten out your own behavior and reach a Buddha paradise. That's cool. Okay? Now we're talking about nung rung. Nung rung means things you can see. Okay? Proving the absence of things that involve something you can see. And this subject's not so long. Okay? The other one is vital and very important. That's where the guy goes into the Buddha, tells the story of his past life and all that. When you get to Nung Rung, my Mi'kmaq doc, there's just a long list of permutations, okay? And I haven't bothered to give you them all. There's 16 permutations, two of them don't hold, and blah, 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 okay? I will, though, give you a few examples of a Nung Rung, my Mi'kmaq doc, since you have to name them on your homework, okay? First one, which I think is the one on your homework, okay? Consider meme teme gyato na chue che. That's the debate in the monastery, okay? Say meme teme gyato na chue che. Okay, me means what? Fire, me. Okay, me means there is no fire. Me. Tema is nyinsen, ten, nighttime. Meme teme gyato, you know. Tenzin Gyatso is His Holiness, okay? The ocean, Dale in Mongolian, okay? Tsumir Gyatso Na Chuchen. Let's talk about a nighttime ocean. Why are they talking about a nighttime ocean? They're talking about on the surface of a huge body of pure water at night, okay? Dua Mete. Say Dua Mete. There's no big billowing smoke there, okay? Me Mebe. Say Me. Maybe. Because there's no fire there. Okay, you can confirm it. I mean, you just stand on the shore, you look out, total black. Okay, there's no smoke out there. Why? You couldn't start a fire out there anyway. Okay, I mean, okay, in theory, a plane could have just crashed there and there's still smoke, but the plane went under, like flight, whatever. Not talking normal case, normal ocean, normal night, you know, pitch black night, you look out. Or, you know, turn off the light, fill up the bathtub, stare at the, you know, stare at the top of the water. There's no smoke there that's resulting from a major fire, okay? And you can confirm it just sitting there. That's all. That's what it means, okay? Now, the thing used as the reason, because there's no fire there, is how, what's its relation to the thing you're trying to prove is not there. It's normally its cause, okay? Fire. Okay, I'll repeat it. Take your bathtub, take your nighttime dark bathroom, bathtub surface, church, and you know. There's no smoke there. There's no huge puffs of smoke there because there's no fire there. Okay? So the thing given as the reason, the main element in the reason is fire. The result of it is smoke. You're proving the absence of smoke by proving the absence of its cause. Okay? That's all. That's all. Now, technically speaking, you could have the result in moment number two, millisecond number two, and there could have been a fire there in millisecond number one, and the plane went under the water, and that's theoretically possible, but we're not talking in those terms, okay? Okay, second one would be this. Consider a rocky mountain crag. Consider a bare rocky mountain crag, okay? Shapa mete, say shapa. Mete. There's no juniper trees there. Okay. Shapa mete. Shing mebeche. Say shing mebeche. Because there's no trees there. There's no vegetation there. Okay. What's the relationship between vegetation and juniper trees? It's like a kyabje. We call kyabje. I mean, one covers the other, okay? I mean, if there's no vegetation, there can't be any juniper trees. Okay, that's all. One covers the other. And like that. You can read the rest from the examples, okay? But those are ways of proving that something doesn't exist there. And generally speaking, juniper trees and smoke are not keldun. Keldun, anybody? They're not abstruse objects, okay? They're not like looking 20 kalpas into the past or something like that. You know, anybody can normally see smoke if it was there. You know, anybody could see a juniper tree if it was there, normally speaking, okay? It's not like pretas or the existence of the direct perception of emptiness in Jay Siller's mind. It's not like something that you and I can't confirm easily, okay? That's all. Okay, we're going to take a break, and on your way back in, you got to go through this door. And you're going to get a chance to pick a number out of a hat. And you're going to go into groups of three people. So the three people are going to get number five, for example. And then by random selection of your karma, you're going to be with two other people. And then we're going to have a debate up on the screen, and you're just going to practice doing it. And then I'll walk around and help you, okay? And that's very much the way we do it in the monastery. By the way, the last part of the reading tonight discusses special kinds of debates in the monastery. You know, and I sat down and just thought about all the different kinds I've ever been in. There must be like 15 different kinds of special debates. Geshe debates, Rikchung debates, Rikchen debates, Soglang, all-night debates, Senpe Damcha, winter debates, home debates, college debates. There's all these beautiful kinds of debates. Debate is used in like 15 different contexts in the monastery. Debates with your roommate. Debates with your scripture teacher. And I just wrote out all the general kinds. It's nothing that I have to teach you per se, but I thought you should read it, and it's nice. It's interesting. All the different ways in which debate is used in the monastery. So take a break, and on the way back, come back to this door, pick your number, and then when I say start, the ones will be over here, okay? So like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, up to, say, 10, okay? And then if your number is 11 or higher, the 11s will start over there, and then it'll work up to here, okay? And then just get in groups of three, I think in the open space there, all right? Okay, come back in 10 minutes and we'll start. All right.
Hello.
Please? Okay, two of your group have to sit down and face towards the center, okay? And one of your group has to stand up and face them, okay? So try to spread out a little bit, okay?
Rubbish.
Oh.
there's any groups that are not.
If you only have two people in your group, that's fine. Okay? One person stand up and one person sit down. Okay, everybody ready? Yo. The debate master that I studied under had an electrical cord that he used. Anyway, he didn't plug it in, but he hit you with it. Okay. Check this out. Say, Rigpe. Jotang. Rigpe. Jotang. Rigpe Jotang means. Jotang means the way it goes, okay? Jotang means the way it goes. Rigpa means a debate, okay? Rigpa Jotang means the whole, how the thing works, you know. First you say this, then he says that, then you say this, then he says that. I've given you one here, okay? And you should practice it, alright? First of all, the guy who's standing up, turn to your opponent and say, ready? Is your foot ready? Is your hand ready? You're going to start a fight, okay? You got to pick a fight. Okay, ready? Person standing up, say, Bumba! Dakba! Yimbeche! Yeah, nice. Okay, one more time. Bumba! Dakba! Yimbeche! Okay. Ooh, nice. Okay. You're starting a fight. You're starting a fight because you're saying, shh, shh, shh. Hey! Let me get that quote. Bumba! Bumba means a water pitcher, right? Dakpa means unchanging thing. Yimbeche means because, okay? You're starting the fight by saying, because a water pitcher is an unchanging thing, okay? What are you trying to prove? It doesn't matter. It's a thing. And when you start a debate, you always start like that. You just start with the because, okay? You go, because water pitchers are unchanging things. Okay? Say again. Guy standing up. Bumba. Takpa. Yimeche. Okay? Alright. Now, you guys sitting down get to respond. Okay, guy sitting down. Ready? Hey. Say, guy sitting down. Tak. Madu. Tamadu. Tamadu. Which means what? Your reason is bad. Okay? The reason is bad. I don't care what you're trying to prove. Stupid reason. Okay? Tamadu. Tamadu. Okay, here we go. Do the first part again. Number, the guy standing up? I'll call you number one, okay? Bumba tapa yimbeche. And they say, Tamadu. You gotta, by the way, you gotta stretch out the talk, okay? Tamadu. Tamadu. Okay, one more time. Number one. Bumba tapa yimbeche. Tamadu. Okay? This is Rigpe Jotang. No matter what the guy says, if it ends in cheer and you want to pick a fight, say, Tamadu. Okay? Now, back to number one. Number one is going to say, you ready, number one? The guy standing up, okay? Bumba. Takpa. Maimata. Yeah, good. Okay. One more time. Bumba. Takpa. Maimata. Okay, what's that mean? What's that mean? Are you telling me that water pitchers aren't unchanging things? Okay, ready? Are you telling me water pitchers aren't unchanging things? And the guy sitting down says, right. That's what I said. Okay. Duh. Duh. Okay. Hold. Now you gotta practice the whole thing again. Okay. Bumba. The guy standing up. Bumba. Takpa. Yimbeche. Tamadu. Tamadu. Okay. Then you come back with, oh, Bumba. Takpa. Mayimbata. And they say, okay, now number one says, Mayinte! Which means, why the hell not? Okay, Mayinte! Why not? Okay, why not? Number two says, number two, Bumba! Mintakpa! Yibetcha! Okay, the guy sitting down doesn't clap his hands, okay? His or her, okay? Say again. Bumba. Mitapa. Yimbeche. Why not? Because water pitchers are changing things, stupid man. Okay, Bumba. Mitapa. Yimbeche. Okay. Then the guy standing up is going to confirm. Do you really believe that? Okay, ready? Guy standing up, there's going to be a slap here, okay? Bumba. Mitapa. Yimbata. Okay. Are you? Yeah, nice. Duh. Okay. Duh. Which means, yeah, that's what I said. Okay. You have to practice this at home over and over again. This exchange. Okay. This exchange over and over again. Okay. Try it one more time. Guy standing up. Bumba. Takpa. Yimbeche. You're starting a fight. You're picking a fight. You're picking a fight. Water pitchers are unchanging things. Then the other guy says, Tamadu. Tamadu. Okay, then you say, oh, guy standing up, ready? Bumba. Tapa. Mayimbata. Are you telling me Bumba? Duh, that's what I said. Then the guy standing up, Mayimte. Why the hell not? Bumba. Mitapa. Yimbeche. Because vases of water pitchers are changing things, okay? Oh, guy standing up. Bumba. Mitapa. Yimbata. Duh. Okay, all right. Practice it with your own group and I'll walk around and critique you, okay? Just that exchange. Do it for about 10 minutes, okay? Practice that at home with all your family and stuff. And see you on when? Tuesday. Monday night, no class. Next Thursday, no class. Monday night is Seichu, and next Thursday is Sojo. Okay? Somebody asked me to just say it again, okay? You start out by saying, Bumba Taba Yimbeche. And they say, Taba Du. You say, Bumba Taba, and then very disgusted sound, Bumba Taba Mayimba Ta. And they say, duh, that's what I said. You say, Mayinte, why the hell not? Okay. Then they say, Bumba Mitaba Yimbeche. Okay. They say, oh, Bumba Mitaba Yimbata. They say, duh. Okay, this is Rigpa Dotan. I'll say it one time in English, okay? Because a water pitcher is an unchanging thing. What are you trying to prove? It don't matter. It's stupid already. Okay? You don't have to hear the assertion, the reason is bad already. Okay? One more time. Because a water pitcher is an unchanging thing. That's a way to pick a fight in a debate ground. Okay? And the other guy says, Damadu, wrong. Okay? You can just say wrong. If you're going to do it in English, wrong. Okay? And then the other guy comes back sarcastically, the guy standing up, are you telling me a water pitcher is not an unchanging thing? Mayimbata. And the guy says, duh, right, that's what I said. Okay? Then you just check in with him. Mayinte, why the hell not? Why isn't it an unchanging thing? And then you come back with, Bumba, mitakba yimbeche, because it's a changing thing, stupid. Okay? Because it's a changing thing. Okay? And then you confirm, you reconfirm. Are you telling me a water pitcher is a changing thing? Bumba mitapa yimbata. And then you say, duh, that's what I said. Right. okay? And that's enough. And then next time we'll do the next series, okay? But the point of learning this, Rigpe Jodang means this fits every debate you ever start, okay? You can just plug in different words. You can go home, debate with your friend, plug in different things. Doesn't matter. The structure is always the same. Rigpe Jodang means the structure of a debate. It always starts like this. Okay, what I mean? So practice that and you got down all the other ones. By the way, everyone who thought they would never learn Tibetan has just learned like 10 words of Tibetan, right? And this is the way to learn Tibetan. You can sit there all day long with dictionaries and books and you won't learn any Tibetan. You debate for 6 months, you can read anything. It's cool. So go home and debate, okay? See you next time. We have to do prayers. Ready?
This is the end of Class 8.
You have been listening to The Art of Reasoning with Geshe Michael Roach, presented by the Asian Classics Institute.
The Asian Classics Institute is dedicated to preserving the pure teachings and practice of Buddhism. For a listing of other topics available, write to The Asian Classics Institute, P.O. Box 20373, New York, New York, 10009, or call 212-475-7752.